down deep in the heart of Texas. Please welcome Josh Reeves.
Yes, yes. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition, episode number 2 of my new show, The Reality Report with Josh Reeves. Different show than my usual one, The Global Reality with Josh Reeves, which I have been doing since September 2007, which is more of a news and current events related and related to conspiracies and stuff like that. This is a new concept, new show that I'm doing where the highlight is audience participation, you, meaning topics from you, questions from you. Without you and your participation, there can't be a show. So we didn't get as many questions and topics as I had hoped for episode 2, but, you know, much like I do with everything in life, gotta go with what we got and make it work. So I hope you guys are doing well. We don't have sponsors, we don't have advertising. All we ask is that you contribute, make a contribution to our monthly operation costs and buy my documentary films, my newest. What have I come out with? I've already come out with 15 this year. Three in just, man, last month alone. Jesus Christ, I can't keep this pace forever, that's for sure. But my newest film, 10 years in the making, is called The Temple of Hathor. It's about the Temple of Hathor Dendera in Egypt. Filmed on location in southern Egypt, not by me, but by someone who filmed it for me, who knew this was a lifelong dream of mine. I gotta be honest with you, film number 35, man, never thought I'd make 35 films. I've talked about this before, but I said in 2007 when I first set out and was working on my first film at that time, 9/11 New World Rising. I was involved in the 9/11 truth movement at that time. I said, my goal is to, over time, create my version of the Alexandrian Library for, like, this type, you know, what people call conspiracy or deep research or whatever. And yeah, man, I gotta be honest with you, with the creation of this newest film, the Temple of Hathor film. Wow. There's not much left I haven't done I want to do with these films. I mean, I'm always going to make films, but as far as like the conspiracy genre and stuff goes, I might be nearing the end of my run on these type of films. I don't know, 40 is a good number. 40 would be a good number to end up this. At this point, it's like garbage time, though. You know what I'm saying? I'm just running up the scoreboard at this point. I've already won the game. I'm just running up the score just because I can at this point. Now, nobody else has made 35 documentaries in this genre, or probably a genre, but yeah, I have. And I would love someone to come along and follow my lead, but you know, just because I want to see what they make. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I know The Secret Rite 2024, which this film has tentatively been titled, could change names. I haven't decided yet. I'm working to have that as my next film, which will be 36, 16 on the year, so That would leave four left to do after that. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. And that's how I've always handled this, you know. I don't set out, for the most part, with the exception of just a very few topics, have I ever set out and said, okay, I'm going to make a film about this. I mean, I've done that, but no, it's not like that every time. Oftentimes, it just comes to me. It floats to me. You know, in the ether, whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? And that's the way this information and the research and everything for me has to do. It just floats to me. I don't force it. I don't struggle to, okay, what can I make a film about? That's never happened. The topics that I feel I should make a film about just present themselves to me and I go with it. It's just like I've talked about when I started my other show, The Global Reality, in 2007. You know, the second show I ever did, I had Professor Peter Dale Scott on the show, and Peter Dale Scott shows up and tells me about the Council for National Policy, and tells me how they're this most powerful group, and, you know, I start looking into it, and I find all these names associated with it, people who have been on the Alex Jones show at that time, and that's one of the connections to the CIA and the Hunt family who were involved in the Kennedy assassination, and Rothschild and the DuPont family and all this stuff. And then Edgar and Elsa Prince, the father of Eric Prince from Blackwater, and they were both CIA, and they were signatories on the founding documents of the Council for National Policy, along with Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb and all this stuff. So, and I just made my first film a few weeks before that. I found out about this, and I go, well, I guess I don't have to think about what my second film is going to be about. It ended up being The Secret Rite, Volume 1 in 2009. So, I just let this stuff float to me and present itself to me. And it always has, and it always does. And then that's when I go, okay, I got to make a movie about this. Or what's happened in the last year a few times. It's never been happened before. Someone will ask me a question about a topic. You know, listen, I'm not going to bullshit anybody. I don't bullshit anybody. You know, somebody asks me a question about something, I'm going to give you a straight fucking answer. Somebody asked me a question about AI last year, and I said, you really want to know, I'll tell you, but don't shoot the messenger, because there's a lot of that going on these days. All I've ever been is a messenger. I feel like people are constantly shooting me, trying to bring about my demise. So I said, look, it's not pretty. It's not good. And so I told them all about it, and they went, holy shit. How come you never made a movie about this? And I went, well, it's a good idea. I don't know. We can't answer that question. Good question. I'm going to do it. So then I made the film AI Armageddon, The Apocalypse Endgame, that came out last year. It's in my download store. Get it. So, yeah, man, I just know, I discovered this a long time ago, that this work and what I do is what God put me here to do. It's my purpose in this incarnation on this planet. And I'm sorry to those of you who have not found your purpose here on this planet. If you have, you just don't know that you have, but that's why it's so important to me and this work and what I do that you support my work and by the films and stuff, alright? So this question, the other ones came in, stuff came in on email. This got left on the actual first episode of the Reality Report that's up on my Rumble channel now. You can just email me, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. Send me your topics and questions for episode 3, okay? So this comes from Lunar Halo on Rumble. I was watching Back to the Future 3. Didn't I mention that recently? It's all going to run together now. I think I don't know if I mentioned that on this show or my other show. I brought Back to the Future 3 and how pissed I was when I went to the movies in 89 when that came out. I was like 13. Especially as a kid. It didn't bother me as much now, but as a kid, and even to a certain extent as an adult, Westerns and war movies are my two least favorite genres of films. They just are. So, being a kid and going to see Back to the Future 3 and it was Western based, I was like, what the fuck is this shit? I was so pissed. Back to the question from Lunar Halo here. I was watching Back to the Future 3 and Doc Brown says if he went to the Dark Ages, he'd probably be burned at the stake as a heretic. And kind of looks at the camera. The whole thing is played like it's dramatic irony, which would only make sense if Christopher Lloyd was a reincarnation of Giordano Bruno or something. Whoa! Pump the brakes, Tito. God damn. That's a fucking wild jump. Listen, I know I'm a conspiracy guy. And I'm supposed to just roll the punches on wild jumps and shit, but I don't know. I don't. I'm gonna be a conspiracy guy. My stuff is very rooted in reality, as opposed to some people. But, really? That could only make sense if Christopher Lloyd is a reincarnation of Giordano Bruno? Well, there is something. Yeah, there's something about, listen, I'll tell you what you should do. You want to see, to quote Doc Brown, you want to see some serious shit? Listen, go to my download store. I even put it on sale recently. And get my complete 5-part Mystery Hollywood series. All right, you want to see some. To me, it's the greatest piece of dot connecting that I've ever done or will ever do. It's this movie called Under the Silver Lake, and it's encoded with all this crazy, wild stuff. And I decoded it. It's even like a coded language in it that I decoded and stuff. Yeah, it's incredible. You should really see my Mystery Hollywood series because I point out there is some stuff in there that I point out regarding Christopher Lloyd. Yeah. Very, very interesting. You gotta see my Mystery Hollywood series. My question is, do you think that Hollywood ever or often makes movie casting decisions based on their belief in reincarnation? Okay. That's a great question, actually. I just felt like it was a bit of a leap there on him being the reincarnation of Giordano Bruno, but no, I'm with you. Do you think Hollywood ever? Well, here's the answer to that question. Do you ever think Hollywood ever or often makes casting decisions based on their belief in reincarnation? Well, I don't have any hard, tangible proof that they do. But you didn't ask me for hard, tangible proof. You asked me what I think. Do I think Hollywood ever or often makes casting decisions based on their belief in reincarnation? I would say that even if I can't prove it with hard, tangible evidence, I would say that personally, and again, this was me if you asking me what I personally think, I would say the answer to that question would be yes, and I'll tell you why. Absolutely. And there's only one reason why I would say yes to that question, because I already know of other groups that do a similar type of thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Specifically the Freemasons and the Mormons. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Oh, yeah. The Freemasons actually track, and I've heard, from what I understand, the Mormons do this too. Because the Mormon church has the most extensive genealogical records of any group in the world. And they do these weird things called the baptism of the dead. I remember it was one of the first stories I read on air back in 2007 when my other show first started, was how the Mormons were doing. Look it up. You can look this up. Baptism, Mormons, baptism of the dead, Nazis. Yeah. They were performing these baptisms of the dead Nazis. What they do is they baptize people into Mormonism post-mortem. Hey, your guess is good as mine. Not quite sure how that's supposed to work, but that is what they do. And the Freemasons are able, somehow, we don't really know how they do it, but somehow Freemasons are able to track people across incarnations. You ever seen that weird movie, The Wachowskis? You know, can't call them the Wachowski brothers anymore because they're Wachowski sisters now. But they did a weird movie called Cloud Atlas. You ever see that movie? That's, a lot of people in that movie came out. They're like, that movie's stupid. Fucking heck, I don't get it. Well, you know, I understand that. It is wacky and weird and seems wild because Hugo Weaving is a chick in some of the scenes. Well, that's what that is. Then we that's what movie's about, reincarnation, how people find each other karmically across various incarnations, they're not even aware of it, you know. Just kind of shows all the threads, ties together and stuff. The Freemasons do this thing where they're able to track, okay, say like someone climbs the ranks in Freemasonry and becomes a high-level important person in the craft of Masonry. When they die, they have some sort of ability that's somehow connected to numbers, numerology. I don't really know. You have to be really high up in the, you know, the level where you're wiping the semen of Jobulon off your chin with one of those Masonic nut aprons they wear. But, it's something to do with that. Oh, absolutely. It absolutely 100% is. And even if you ask one, they don't talk about it. And this shit's not really out there in the realm of scope of, you know, information and conspiracy stuff. But it's 100%. But yeah, I went to, I've covered this in a few of my documentaries. Back in 2009, I went up to Guthrie, Oklahoma. I was in town to see the Ben Wilco play. And while we were in Oklahoma City, we went up to the to Guthrie, Oklahoma, which is where the largest Masonic lodge in America is. They filmed scenes from the outside. We were watching the movie Rain Man. There's a scene where like Tom Cruise like runs out in the middle of the street, and like it looks like it's supposed to be in Washington, D.C., and it looks like the White House is in the background behind him. That's that Guthrie Lodge. It looks like the fucking White House. You roll up on this thing, you're like, what the fuck is this? Because it's just in a sleepy little small town outside of Oklahoma City. And so we went and went on the tour and stuff, and they had some, you know, Freemason guy giving the tour and everything. If people could be asking questions, and I would, you know, I would chime in and say things. And there's a symbol on the floor, and this person goes, what's this symbol? Because it's kind of a weird, pointy, you know, kind of a star symbol, round, a circle in the middle with points emanating out of it, kind of like a sunbeams or starlight or something. I said, oh, that's the... The guy goes, oh, that's just a symbol for Yahweh. That's what the Freemason guy on the tour said. And I said, actually, that's the Tetragrammaton. And he froze. And he turns around and he looks and he goes, yeah, that's exactly right. in my head. I'm like, why didn't you say that, motherfucker? You know what I mean? Why didn't you say that? Why didn't you say Tetragrammaton? Why didn't you say that's a symbol for Yahweh? Fuck out of here. That's a Tetragrammaton. And so that this kept happening, right? Like, someone would ask a question, point something out. Freemason boy would say some fucking bullshit. And I go, actually, you know, the fathers of the Holy Ghost, that's actually the three stages of man, because they have these stained glass windows in there. They can't even get insured because they're so priceless in this place. They're one of a kind, and they depict the three full stages of man. Some people will refer to that as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, but the three full stages of man. And he's going on trying to make it sound like it's a religious thing. I go, that's, you know, I was like, you listen, you can call that. You can call them the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost all day long, all you want. That's the threefold stages of man. That's like one of the bedrocks of Masonry. And the guys, and so after a while, after doing this, the guy's going, yeah, you're exactly right. And so after the thing's over, the guy, the old Mason guy, he goes, hey, man, are you a Mason? I go, no, man, I'm not. He goes, you ought to be. You ought to be. He kept saying that. You're not amazing? He said it like five times. You're not amazing? Oh, boy, you ought to be. Man, you ought to be. You ought to be. I go, why? Because I know more than you, bitch. you don't tell me I know my shit. I know my shit when it comes to Freemasonry because I've studied it for 30 years because I have a deep personal connection to that. You know, I was born, I mean, Jesus Christ, I'm a ginger. I was born a crippled ginger. You know what I'm saying? Talk about uphill battle. It ain't been nothing but uphill for me my whole life since the day I was born. That's the double fucking whammy right there. Crippled and ginger? They'd have drowned my ass 100 years ago. Oh, the wonders of modern medicine. Anyway, yeah, my dad's best friend's father, who created the mounted horseback police in Dallas and stuff back in the day. He was a high-level Scottish Rite Freemason. And he came in the day I was born, and he told my dad, Bart, this child will never have to worry about anything, about medical costs related to having a club foot or anything else. I'm sponsoring him with the Texas Scottish Rite Children's Hospital for crippled children. He will have the best medical care, drunk everything. It'll all be handled, all be taken care of, all paid for by the Freemasons until he turns 18. Yeah. Yeah, I got sponsored. Yeah, I got sponsored by the fucking Masons on the devil. And my dad said, and he could never get any clarification on this. My dad said it was that he did this because it was something to do with numbers. And you better fucking believe, my whole life I've been looking at that going, something to do with numbers, huh? Well, huh. July 6th, 1976. That's when I was born. 7-6-76. 7-6 is 13. Another 7-6 is 13. 1976. I was born 13 years after the Kennedy assassination. 13. You know what I'm saying? I mean, something like that. And then I had my corrective surgery when I was 6 years old at Scottish Rite Children's Hospital. And I don't know what happened. Something, I mean, I know they broke every bone in my left foot and reconstructed it from scratch and all this stuff. I still got a huge scar on from my ankle all the way up to my big toe on the right side of my left foot. But I don't know if something happened when I was under anesthesia or something. I just remember hearing this voice say, you can do it, Josh. You can do it. You can do it, Josh. You can do it, over and over again. And when I came to in the recovery room, I felt it was probably just the trauma from the surgery, but I felt as if I had my soul, my spirit had been on some kind of spiritual journey outside of my body, and then it came back into my body when I woke up. Which, you know, is not crazy. I mean, it's, some people believe that's what happens when we dream, you know. But, I don't know. Going to Scottrack Children's Hospital, and I spent a lot of time there growing up. I used to always go there. And then my parents sent me to a psychologist there when I was like 7 or 8 years old because I had, you know, issues, trauma issues from when I was a kid. They didn't help me at all. They would ask me stupid questions, and we were on the top of this building, you know, high-rise building. And I was, you know, good, nice view. I'm 8 years old. I'm looking out the window, and then a psychologist asked me something. I can't remember what they asked me, and I was like, they're like, hey, what are you doing? I was like, I'm standing out the window. And they go, that's why we're here. Now, why we're here, which I didn't know at the time, was because I'm traumatized, and I was had a major trauma happen to me when I was 6 years old, and I had no way to express it or tell anyone. You know, I just had to live with it my whole life until I was old enough to realize what had happened to me and process that and realize who had done it to me. And yeah, it fucked me up my whole life. I'm over it now, but nonetheless. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big joiner. I'm just not a joiner. I'm not a go along to get along guy. I don't join clubs or cliques or groups or frats or. I'm just not that guy. I've never been that guy. So me joining the Freemasons is just. And the fact of the matter is, you want to be 100% honest with you. They don't want you to know this. You want to. Biggest secret of Freemasonry is, I'll tell you, it's that you don't have to become a Freemason to learn the craft. You don't. They'll tell you you do because they want your money like everybody does. All this that I've been saying to say that to answer the question about reincarnation, that when I went to that Guthrie Lodge, the tour ended and I asked the Freemason guy on the tour, I said, hey man, I said, you guys are Freemasons. So you guys got to have the blueprints to this place, right? He goes, yeah, we do. They're in the basement in the trophy room. That's not on the tour. Follow me. Yeah, dude. This fucking guy, because I knew my shit. He knew all, wasn't a fucking dummy. He said, yeah, we do. It's not on the tour. Follow me. I'll show you. Took us down, and it was fucking crazy. Took us down to, like, this fucking dungeon area in the basement. They had this fucking huge trophy room. They had an ephod in there. You know what an ephod is? That, like, fucking, like, remember in Indiana Jones when they're doing the ritual thing with the Ark of the Covenant? The guy's got the fucking chest breastplate on with the jewels on it? Yeah, they had one of those in a glass case with all of this Masonic, like, China and stuff going back to the 1800s, and swords, Masonic ritual swords, all this crazy shit, and there was a blueprint. And these blueprints had a woman's name on it. And I said, hey man, this place was designed by a woman? He goes, yeah, lock, stock, and barrel, everything, interiors, everything. Hey, he said, yes, this entire place was. I said, that's odd. He goes, why is that? I said, well, other than the Eastern Star, Order of the Eastern Star, which is for women who have husbands or fathers who are in Freemasonry, women can't be Freemasons. And he goes, correct. I go, but this place is imbued front to back, tits to toes, with Masonic architecture, mathematics, this place could only have been built by someone who knows the craft. And you should have seen this guy's eyes, the face light up. He was like, yeah, that's right. I go, well, then do tell, bro. Explain it to me then. Make it make sense to me. How the fuck did this place have been constructed by a woman if women aren't allowed to be masons? And how the fuck did she get all that knowledge in those days before the, you know, way back, way before, 100 years before the internet? 200 years, whatever, 150 years, whatever it was, before the internet, whenever that building was built. How did a woman? And he just kind of looked at me, kind of gave me a grin. And he's like, we all got our secrets. And I just got to go, oh. Yeah, okay, I heard. I was like, because she was, I was like, because she's a woman in this life. But in the past life, she was some famous male, high-level male mason. And you guys tracked her across incarnations. And you guys knew that this woman, even though in this life she might be a 40-year-old woman, in the past she was this. And he goes, how do you know that? I go, man, you should have just said, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. You really opened a can of worms now. Oh, man. How do you know that? That's what I would. Oh, okay. So I am right about that then. Or not, because the guy kept saying over and over again, you're not a mason, you're not a mason, you ought to be, boy, you ought to be. Kept saying it over and over to me. And then when we were getting ready to leave, the tour was over, and we were kind of standing there talking with the Freemason guy. Because in this building, it's the only place in the world where that you can go there and do all the rituals for the upper levels. And he was telling us how, yeah, you know, if you're just a Blue Lodge guy, this is the only place in the world you can come to on a Friday. And by Sunday, you can graduate as a 32nd degree Freemason and he said 16th degree New York Rite. I think that's 16 degrees New York Rite. Anyway, you can go there, and this guy was a 32nd degree, the highest level Scottish Rite and the highest level York Rite. I thought you had to be one or the other. He was like, no, you can be both. He goes, I'm both. So I was like, I didn't see on the tour anywhere the Assyrian room. I was like, I saw that you guys have a room here just dedicated to the Assyrian Empire, which is bonkers to me because the Assyrian Empire predates the creation of Freemasonry by a very long time. And he kind of looked squirrely when I said that. And there was like a receptionist at the desk, and he's like, Mary? He's like, can you get me the keys to the Assyrian room, please? And he goes, it's under construction right now, so it's off limits, and we're not including you on the tour, but let's go, I'll show you. He's like, they came all the way from Dallas to see the Assyrian room. I'm going to show them the Assyrian room. That's what he told the secretary. I'm like, yeah, let's go. And they had one of those, like those, I don't know what you call them, those, like, Babylonian, Akkadian, Sumerian, like God, you know, like the Nurgle, like the Nurgle, was it the Nurgle Games, something like that. But it was those strange looking creatures. Had one of those over this giant fireplace, and all these, like, you know, Assyrian devils. I was like, huh. You know, that's because even though it wasn't called Freemasonry yet, the craft was still around in the days of the Assyrian Empire and the Babylonian Empire and the Sumerians and all that. It just didn't have. It was basically like you had Coca-Cola, you just didn't have a name for it yet, but you already had it. We're drinking Coke. What became Coca-Cola? Right? That kind of thing. But man, when I said, I was just curious as to why a group that came thousands of years after the Assyrian Empire would have an entire room dedicated to the Assyrians. It's just odd. Boy, when I said that, his face. that was the best part of it. My sister goes, did you notice something? I was like, what? She goes, you know, he never said you were wrong about anything. I mean, yeah, I noticed. And the wildest, though, was when we were leaving after we went and saw the Assyrian room. And, we were leaving the the lodge. And I was, you know, thanking the brother for the tour and all that. And said, you know, and he started, went to shake his hand. And he put a grip on me, one of those Masonic grips. Hand grip, handshakes. Holy fuck. Maybe the biggest revelation of Freemasonry happened to me in that moment. He shakes my hand, he puts the Masonic grip on me, and I feel this. Remember in Avatar when he takes his ponytail and he like binds it with the dragon and okay, when he put this grip on me, I'm telling you, it was like that. He put this grip on me, and in my head, it was like a telepathic link when he shook my hand and used this hand grip. It was the only thing I can relate to. It's the only analogy I can make is that Avatar thing. It was like that. And I heard his voice. He didn't speak. He didn't say a word. I heard his. He looked at my eyes, gripped my hand with the hand, shook my hand. I heard his voice. When he looked at my eyes, I heard his voice say, "Join us." Shook his hand, walked away. I went, and I got in the car, and I was dumbfounded. I was, oh my God. Oh, holy fuck. Because I didn't think I'd go there and crack any of the fucking secrets for you guys. It was just to, you know, to get footage and pictures and stuff for future films and whatnot. And I did that. But they can communicate telepathically with those grips. Yeah. Where the fuck does that come from? So to answer your question there, Mr. Lunar Halo, do I think Hollywood ever and often makes casting decisions based on their belief in reincarnation? I would say that's not out of the realm of possibility at all, because, again, the Masons and the Mormons doing this and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, like I said, I can't give you a specific example and say, here's a specific example, absolutely that's going on here. You know, I can't do that. I also can't tell you that you're out of line, you're crazy and thinking that might be a possibility. Can't do it. Won't do it. Yeah, it's fucking wild. That whole experience with that Freemason was just crazy. He put that grip on me, dude. Tight grip, handshake, look at me in the eye, and I can hear. He communicates telepathically with me. And he said, "Join us." I'm good. Listen, I've had multiple high-level Freemasons tell me I know more than 99% of all active Freemasons today. You know what that means? That means I don't need to join your shit, motherfucker. That's what that means. I already know your shit. I don't need to join it. But, yeah, there's something to that. There's something to tracking people across incarnations that is an art and a science. And only, you know, the Buddhists have that thing. That's how they choose the lamas. And the Chinese interfered with that. They kidnapped the Panchen Lama and replaced him with this Chinese imposter Dalai Lama that we have now, the one that sucks little boys' tongues and shit. That guy's not the real Dalai Lama. That's a Chinese imposter they put in there to usurp the process of the Lamas being of the incarnation. So instead of the Dalai Lama being someone who reincarnated here to be the Lama, of course, what do the Chinese do with everything? They replace the real thing with a fake. And act like it's just as good and just the same. It's not. Yeah. My Chinese Cartier sunglasses I wear are not as good as the fucking real deal. But we act like they are. You know what I'm saying? It's whatever. So, yeah. popes, that kind of thing. They do that with popes. Yeah, there is something to that, my friend. You are not wrong. Again, I can't verify that Christopher Lloyd is this former actor. You know, this your suggestion you gave for it. Maybe it is. Well, I know. Maybe you're 100% right, and I'm the dumbass. But I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But just on your question of do I think it's possible that Hollywood does that, 100%. But I also would say it's probably a lot higher than Hollywood. I don't think it's Hollywood. I think I'd be giving Hollywood too much credit. I think it's forces that are above Hollywood that have their tentacles directly into Hollywood and the elf. And yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Great question, Lunar Halo. Great question. That's what I'm talking about, man. So I'm excited about the show. I hope we get more people leaving comments with questions and topics and stuff. All right, let's go to the email questions now. This is from Dave in New York. Dave says, what's the craziest thing you ever heard about that you thought couldn't be true that is? That's a good question, man. I don't know, but everything's a lie? No, that's not my answer, but, you know. how much time you got, bro? No, just off the top of my head, honestly, I was just joking, but, you know, an honest answer to that question. Back even before I began doing my other show and making films and stuff, this is probably around 2005, 2006, close to 20 years ago. I heard about something called spider goats. Some of you probably heard about spider goats. Maybe not all of you, but I heard about that, and I went, fuck out of here. Oh, those fucking spider goats, yeah. You know, wait, that's fucking real. Fuck off. You know, I was laughing so hard. Spider goats. Goats that are also spiders? Yeah, okay. Spiders are also goats? Yeah, okay. And, you know, I just laughed at it and laughed it off at first and just was like, that's fucking ridiculous, whatever. And I was like, well, you know, shits and giggles. Won't hurt anything. Let me, look into this. See if there's anything to it. Holy shit. Learned a big lesson that day. Don't laugh at anything, no matter how ridiculous it sounds, until you take it out for yourself. Because it turns out spider goats are real. Yeah. Spider goats are absolutely real. The gay bomb probably was the other one. That was the other one where I was like, no way, that's fucking real. Looked that up. And it's interesting because in both those cases, they're like, oh, we're not working on that anymore or whatever. Well, yeah, but you did or you tried. And all kinds of what they said about Reagan's Star Wars Strategic Defense Initiative, too. Everybody thought that went the way of the dodo bird and didn't happen. And it called it a failure. No, it wasn't a failure. It was a 100% resounding success. You just didn't hear about it because they put it on the black budget in order to fund it off the black budget because they couldn't get taxpayer funding for the program because everybody thought it was sci-fi bullshit because it had the name Star Wars Weapons Platform, the Strategic Defense Initiative is what it was actually called. But spider goats, yeah, they crossed the DNA of a goat with the DNA of a spider, and they could get these goats to produce in their milk this high tensile strength webbing that they used to make Kevlar bulletproof vests out of. Yeah. It's all true. When I first heard of that, I was like, fucking spider guns. Look out here. Somebody was baked as fuck when they came up with that one. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you hear some of these things, you're like, somebody was smoking the gods when they came up with that. And then you read it and you go, am I smoking the gods? Because this shit is real. But yeah, that's definitely one where I went, yeah, that's, you know. But then people always say, well, they didn't actually do it, or they tried to. It doesn't matter. Same thing with the gay bomb. They were wanting to make a bomb during the second Iraq war after 9/11. They wanted to drop this gay bomb on the Middle East so Hajis would start fucking sucking each other's fucking halal beef sticks on the battlefield. that's where I was like, listen, fuck out of here if you think they fucking didn't make it. They got that shit somewhere. That's sitting on a shelf somewhere. Nobody gets the cojones to use it because, you know, they're afraid of the repercussions, but yeah, they made that shit. They built that shit. They made the fucking gay bomb. They sure as fuck did. Oh man, dropping. That's what they talked about, though. They talked about dropping it on these fucking Arabs and dropping it on Al Qaeda shit so they fucking start plowing each other with halal beef sticks in the butt. That my point is, yeah, that's my answer. Spider goats, gay bomb. I was like, nah, nope, ain't buying into that. Turns out, wrong, both true, 100%. Another one, I'll tell you another one under that category, separate from my two answers there, is one that is a subject of one of my films that I made this year. I made a film this year called Operation Dominic, Fishbowl and Starfish. The nuking of the Van Allen radiation belts. Yeah, that's one I was like, yeah, right, it didn't happen. And I looked it up, and I looked at the dates, I looked at what was going on, and I went, oh my fucking God. It's absolute proof as to how, forget all the other stuff that's obvious that they were using sets and props, and that you couldn't get, they didn't have real-time video where you could broadcast from space in those days. Everything that was filmed and shown, whether it be a movie or on TV, had to be filmed on photographic film and developed in a lab first. There was no video in those days. That's an absolute fucking lie. And then the people who believe in the movies, oh, well, you don't know, NASA probably had something everybody else didn't have. Bullshit. They did not. It didn't exist. But, the Russians beat us. So they discovered the Van Allen radiation belts in 1958. Eisenhower starts talking about trying to go to the moon. By 1960, was it 60 or 61? The fucking Russians beat us to space. By 1962. Operation Dominic, with its adjacent programs, Operation Fishbowl, Operation Starfish, with a bunch of Starfish Prime, they're all detailed in my film. And I've got the actual declassified footage that I remastered for this thing. You should really see this film. They nuked the Van Allen radiation belts. It created an additional artificial belt. Because the U.S. military went, you know what? Nah. Hard pass on that. Goddamn Russians already beat us to putting a man in space. In a way, they're beating us to outer space. They're beating us to the moon. We ain't doing that. If we can't get there, and Eisenhower had already figured out that Van Allen radiation belts were a problem with sending a crewed mission to the moon. And they said, you know what? Russia has restarted nuclear testing in their country, and we need to show these motherfuckers that y'all gonna start testing again, we gonna start testing again. Which was completely ridiculous because we'd already dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, okay? Everybody in the world knew full well we had nuclear capability that worked, and we were prepared to use it if we had to. You know what I'm saying? That is the lamest excuse for a pissing contest that I've ever heard. That we did these atmospheric nuclear tests, we nuked the Van Allen radiation belts, which isn't even in the atmosphere, it's right outside the atmosphere, which then made the Van Allen radiation belts worse, which then made all space travel either leaving Earth or coming into Earth from outer space impossible without dosages to deadly amounts of radiation. Yeah, watch my film. My film, it's called Operation Dominic, Fishbowl and Starfish. I've got a modern clip in there, a NASA clip in there, where they're talking about this new NASA spacecraft. And the NASA scientist right there on the film goes, talking about the Van Allen radiation belt. This is only like a couple of years ago. And he says, yeah, we've got to figure out how to send a crew of people through the Van Allen radiation belt and back through it before we can, you know, successfully launch a mission with this spacecraft. Wait, what? You told us over and over again it wasn't a problem. You just went around them. Apologists went around them. Yeah, took a shortcut, you know. In an unmaneuverable craft made of fucking tinfoil and PVC pipe. Yeah, we just went around it, you know. Took a shortcut. Bullshit. No, you didn't. Because we nuked them hoes and made them worse. By the time the Apollo mission rolled around, it was already a problem by the time the Apollo mission rolled around after they nuked their own radiation belt in 62. It was impossible. Okay? And if Elon starts trying to send people to Mars, he's going to run into that same problem too. It can't be done, guys. They made sure that nobody can come to Earth from outer space without getting a deadly dose of radiation. That's the question. And that's the question I posed in my film, Operation Dominic, Fishbowl and Starfish. Send my download store now, please get a copy. Was that to keep us all in Earth, or was it to keep people out of Earth? That's the question, right? Well, we can ponder that one until the end of time. So, yeah, the nuking of the Van Allen radiation belt is definitely up there with one of those. What? That can't be true. And look into it and go, it's absolutely 100% true. God damn. Next question. This comes from Kim in Idaho. Idaho? Utaho. Kidding. Out of all the topics that you've made films on, which ones are your personal favorites? And what can people do to support your efforts, Kim in Idaho? Well, a two-part question. Okay. Boy, I got to be honest with you, Kim. Those what are your favorites questions? Got to be honest with you, Kim. My least favorite questions of all. Yeah. It's like asking somebody that has eight kids, what's your favorite kid? I mean, they're all my kids. I love them all. People ask you guys, because a lot of people know I'm a diehard, lifelong Rush fan. I saw them nine times. And people ask me what my favorite Rush album is, my favorite Rush song. And the song one's a lot easier, I think, than the album one. Because for me, what's your favorite Rush album comes with from what era? You know what I mean? The return question for me is from what era? I mean, from the 70s alone, I have three. It's a three-way tie for me for the 70 albums, and I love them all, but I can't pick one over the other between 2112, Hemispheres, and Permanent Waves. All three of those two, I mean, those are my three favorite Rush albums from the 70s. 80s, of course, you know, I love all the 80s albums. A lot of people don't. I love them all. Every single one of the 80s albums. Favorite from the A's albums? Oh, gosh. I don't know. It's probably a tie between Grace Under Pressure and Moving Pictures and Signals. God, I love all those albums. Signals, Moving Pictures, you know. Anyway, my point is, which ones are your favorite questions? Definitely my least favorite questions. Just for future reference, if you're going to ask me a question, you can ask me whatever you want. I don't care. It doesn't have to be about conspiracy. It can be about any topic, anything. But yeah, those what are your favorites? Okay, so this is a two-part question. Of all the times you made films on, which ones are your personal favorites? Well, gosh, that's hard. This newest one that I made, The Temple of Hathor, Building of the Gods, I'm just so happy because this is one of those ones I never thought I'd get to make. It was one of the unattainable crown jewels that I finally got to achieve that I never thought would happen. It just came out 2 days ago, so 3 days ago, whatever it was now. So get a copy of that in my download store, Temple of Hathor, Building of the Gods. You know, the only film I've ever gotten to make out of it is the Rockwall film I wanted to make. I wanted to have a dig and film it and document all the things that people say happened at the other digs they did but didn't happen to capture on video. You know, the low-frequency oscillation waves from the engine of the backhoe on the wall, causing it to vibrate and roar and produce sound and produce electricity and stuff, that kind of thing. I want to capture that stuff on tape because, to me, that's the stuff that's going to go, okay, this is not some natural formation. You know, the shark's teeth embedded into it because it was a seawall as one of its uses, you know. So, yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you. Tough. I don't think I can answer that question. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm happy and content with all the films I've made. There's not one that I've made that I look back on and go, I don't know, maybe I should have made that film. Well, maybe one. I don't know. I talked about it before. I made a film last year, One True God, The Unholy Trinity, about Jobulon, because that's the one true God of Judaism, Christianity, Islam, the Freemasons. It's this interdimensional fucking creature with the head of a body of a spider and the head of a cat and a human. And yeah, it's like fucking Gozer of the Gozerian from fucking Ghostbusters. Yeah, it's just wild. I felt like after I came out with that movie and revealed the things and the secrets of Masons that I revealed in that movie, that, you know, I cursed myself from that. So, you know, but still, no, I don't have any regrets in life. You know, everything. I feel like every topic I've chosen to make a film about is important. So, picking a favorite would just be whatever my favorite topic is right now. Okay? Sorry to be vague on that one, Kim, but that's just the truth, just the way it is. And the second part of your question is, what can people do to help support your efforts? Well, buy my downloads. Donate. Right now I'm trying to keep my electricity from being turned off. And I'm trying to raise $50. So dayglow76@yahoo.com is my PayPal email address. That's dayglow76@yahoo.com on PayPal. And then on the Cash App, Reeves Radio, all lowercase, one word, no spaces or anything. Reeves Radio on the Cash App. And on Venmo, it's capital J, Josh, dash, capital R, Reeves, dash, 61, the numerals. So, yeah. Buy my films. And make a contribution. It's what you can do to help support my efforts, Kim. Thank you for asking. And thanks everybody for their questions. And please send and leave comments on this video or email them to me for topics and questions for the next show, okay? As you know, I'm a filmmaker, so, you know, I admire a lot of old auteurs and guys. One of my favorite old guys of filmmaking is Fritz Lang. Made the movie Metropolis and all that. Fritz Lang was kind of like the Stanley Kubrick of his time. Yeah. Like, he could make, you know, his set design and everything. He would make these ultra-realistic models and sets and stuff for us. I mean, if you've never seen Metropolis, it's a masterpiece. But, it's interesting. He was a German guy. But, he's from Germany. But, much like the United States government did, because when Stanley Kubrick made Dr. Strangelove, he had asked permission from the U.S. government to film inside of a B-52 Stratofortress aircraft. And the U.S. government told him to go fuck himself. They did. They're like, fuck you. Go fuck yourself. We don't want anything to do with you. He's a dick. Whatever. And he's like, okay. So he acquired a photograph. A single photograph, ladies and gentlemen. Stanley Kubrick acquired a single photograph of the cockpit of a B-52 Stratofortress aircraft. And from that single photograph, he recreated the interior and cockpit of a B-52 Stratofortress aircraft in the movie Dr. Strangelove. And when the government saw that, they went, whoa, 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 wait a second here. Wait, what? We didn't let this guy inside of this aircraft. We told him, hell fucking no. He gets his hand on one photograph and does this? Oh, we gotta put this guy to work. And of course, they fund him, and their funding is what he used to create 2001 Space Odyssey, considered by many to this day to be the greatest science fiction movie ever made. And then, of course, you know what happened after that. But Fritz Lang was kind of like even in terms of filmmaking, so he was kind of like the Stanley Kubrick of his day. And Hitler saw Fritz Lang's work and loved it. Thought it was amazing. So Hitler called for a meeting with Fritz Lang, and Fritz Lang comes in and meets with the Fuhrer, and Hitler tells him, look, we need you. Your work's incredible. I want you to do all of our films. All of our films for Germany. All of our propaganda films, all of our movies, cinema movies, everything. Pay whatever you want. And Fritz Lang went, well, Adolf, I'm Jewish. Because, you know, Fritz Lang is not a Jewish name, you know what I mean? His name wasn't like Artie Feldstein or something, you know? It was Fritz Lang. He said, you know, Adolf, I'm Jewish. Hitler paused, looked him dead in the eye, put his finger and pointed to his own chest. Hitler did to his chest, looked at Fritz Lang and said, I decide who's Jewish. Me. Dude, I mean, at that moment, you just shit your pants and go, okay, Pierre, whatever you want. What do you need? Let's go. Let's do it. Back that Breeze truck up and let's go. You know what I'm saying? I'll pay you whatever you want. I mean, listen. You don't have to like Hitler or be a fan of Hitler. I certainly am not, but God damn, that's baller as fuck. You ever notice that? How I love these guys, Bond villains and, you know, bad guys and stuff. They're bad guys, but God damn, you got to kind of admire them to a certain degree because they're baller as fuck. Hitler was baller as fuck. A lot of people don't like Trump. He's baller as fuck. A lot of people didn't like Saddam Hussein. He was baller as fuck, too. Remember, he had gold toilets in every room and shit. They had real gold. You know what I'm saying? Stalin was baller as fuck. You ever see some of the places that guy lived in? I mean, he's, you know, well, my point is, game recognizes game, you know what I'm saying? That motherfucker was a baller. You don't like Hitler to recognize him. That dude was a baller. You know, he had Hugo Boss designing all the SS uniforms and shit. I mean, if Hitler wasn't balling out of control, who the fuck was? You know what I'm saying? If he wasn't balling out of control, who was? Hitler was balling, dude. Not what a baller thing to say. I decide who's Jewish. Dude, listen, at that point, if you're Fritz Lay, you just gotta go, fair enough. You know what I'm saying? Hey, fair enough. Fair enough, bro. What do you want? That's what I do. If fucking Trump came to me and was like, all right, the threes, I need you to make some movies for me. I need you to make a documentary on my life. I need you to make something about Crooked Hillary. I need you to make a film about how hot my daughter is. No, scratch that. I need you to make a documentary for me. You know, whatever. I mean, I'm not saying Trump's Hitler. I'm just saying, you know, I do it. I do that shit. You kidding me? I'm not Jewish either, so hey, that's a plus, right, Trump? But I'm just a historian of music and film and stuff like that. So I thought that was an interesting story because it's funny. It just seemed funny to me, even somebody like Puff Daddy or even Epstein or something. Those guys were balling out of control. Yeah, the pieces of shit. You know, you can simultaneously be a piece of shit and be balling out of control. Those guys definitely were. You know what I'm saying? I mean, God damn, that shit, that line from Hitler was just pure baller. I mean, can you imagine how much power you at least think you gotta have, or at least think you have, to make a statement like that when you're asked to make films for the Nazis? Adolf, you know, I'm a Jew, man. I decide who's Jewish. I mean, what the fuck are you supposed to say that shit? You just fucking sick Heil, goose step, and take the money, take the bag, and get the fuck out of there. I mean, there's not really anything else you can do with that. Oh, man, this has been fun. Trying to keep my power on, so anything you can donate to help raise the 50 bucks we have left to keep from being turned off on Monday. Please donate 5 downloads of all my films, okay? I love you guys. We'll see you next time. Please send your comments and your questions and your topics for episode 3. Leave them in the comment section or email them to me, globalrealityshow@gmail.com, all right? You guys take care. We'll see you next time.